Good afternoon, everybody. How many speakers are present in the Song of Songs? Three. If we were to categorize them, if we were to actually try and count them by number, we're not sure. So we have Solomon, his wife, and who would we count as the third speaker? The wife keeps referring to them as the daughters of Jerusalem. So we have Solomon speaking, we have the Shulamite woman speaking, as we find out later, and then we have this chorus of women. Now, his wife is the one that opens the poem. Really, some think it's a series of poems that were sort of collated together. But either way, what do we learn about her concerning how she feels about Solomon as soon as the poem opens up in chapter 1 and verse 2?
She sort of likes him.
Hank says that she sort of likes him. We could say that she has a desire for him. She anticipates being together with him. And we learned two other interesting things about her. What did she mean when she said, "I am dark"?
She got her tan out in the sun.
She got her tan out in the sun. She was a working girl. That sounds wrong. She was a girl who worked in the fields. She was a common field worker. And how did that draw her to feel about her physical attractiveness? What did she think about it? And she wasn't very confident. She said, "Don't look at me because I'm dark. Don't look at me because I've worked in the fields." Now, were the daughters of Jerusalem jealous of the love that this woman had for Solomon?
Most women are.
Well, there's a point, we're not to it yet, where they do ask her about it, but specifically, they actually rejoice in this love that she has. They celebrate the love that she has for Solomon. In the relationship with Solomon that she had, was she looking for permanence or just a short fling, kind of one-night stand?
Permanence.
That's what she was looking for. Remember, she says, "Where do you take your flock to rest?" This is around about verse 7 and 8. Where do you take your flock? And that in the King James, "that turneth aside by the flocks." In the Hebrew, that's a word that means a veil, which has sort of a cultural implication of essentially she's telling him, "I'm not a prostitute. I'm not just here for this one-night stand thing. I'm looking for permanence." Now, Solomon responds to this. You remember how he responded to her desire for permanence and her insecurities concerning her physical beauty? What does he say when she asks for permanence? Does he say, "Yeah, I'll give it to you"? Or does he say, "Well, I'm just looking for a one-night fling"? Yeah, he says, "Follow the flocks where I care for them." That's what he means there. He says, "I'm going to take care of you. I'm looking for permanence in this as well." And then he tries to sort of soften her insecurities. And he talks about her being a female horse among Pharaoh's horses. He says, "You're a real looker." That's what he essentially is telling her. Now, she says, and this is chapter 2 and verse 1, "I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys." And she's saying she's the most beautiful thing in the world. Remember that word for rose there, that's not, it's a little misleading because it's not the type of rose that we think of. It was a common meadow saffron. She uses two very common flowers. And she says, that's me. It's not that she's not saying she's ugly in any way, but she's also not saying, hey, I'm the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Because she said before, she said, I'm dark but comely. I am tanned, but I am still lovely, kind of the idea there. So I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Essentially, well, you know, I'm not the most attractive woman that you're ever going to find, but I'm also not unattractive from her perspective. Now, Solomon responds to this. What does he say that she is? Verse 2. He says, yeah, you are a lily. But then what does he compare her to?
Thorns.
Thorns. Who are the thorns?
All the rest
of the ladies. So he does not deny the fact that, you know what? Yes, you are a lily. As far as your beauty goes, it is humble and common. Mm-hmm. But from his perspective and how he saw her, he says it's if the rest of the all the other ladies are just a bunch of thorns compared to you. Mm-hmm. So when you compare a lily to thorns, well, you know which one generally seen is more beautiful. Now, we'll continue here, but question number one on the worksheet, what is the theme of the Song of Songs? And really calling it the Song of Solomon, there's nothing wrong with that, because the Song of Solomon, it is the song. He had other songs, but this is the one. And that's the idea with the Song of Songs. It's the most beautiful song that he had. But what I chose for it that seemed to make sense to me was a unique love. Because we learn a lot about love, marital love in this. But we learned that it's unique. Now, yes, Solomon had other wives, but the love that we have for our spouse is unique to that individual in many ways. And there's some other unique things about the Song of Songs that I'll bring up, one of them specifically next week, but really doesn't come up necessarily yet. So we have this discussion that's going back and forth between Solomon, between his wife, and between these women. Now, in chapter 2 and verse 3, she's going to respond. And while last week we kind of took a little bit of time so I could show you how we know when the speakers change, this week I'm not going to sort of take the time to prove exactly. I'm just going to tell you this is the person that's speaking, and take notes if you want. And again, it's helpful to have commentaries and thus and such, because they can show you where from the Hebrew we can pick up on this stuff that in the English sometimes it just doesn't come out. And I will freely admit there are some places where it's somewhat debatable as to who is speaking, but those spots are sort of few and far between in Solomon. For the most part, it kind of speaks volumes for itself as who is speaking. So she's going to respond to him calling her a lily among thorns. She says, as the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am sick of love. Or the idea there is, I am sick with love. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. So she starts to compare him to foliage. And she says, you are like the apple tree among the trees of wood. That is you among all these people. I sat down in your shadow, and I had great delight, and your fruit was sweet to my taste. Now remember, we are in the Song of Songs, which is about intimacy. And a lot of times when we see parallels and figures about fruit, that is what is being discussed. So she fully enjoys and longs for intimacy with him. And she talks about being in different places, and she's sick with love, or she is love sick, so to speak. She's just overcome with these emotions, and his left hand is under her head, and his right hand doth embrace me. Again, we have visions of the husband and wife intimacy here. But then she says this, I charge you, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up nor awake my love till he please. And this is a somewhat difficult verse to figure out what it's talking about, some of different thoughts. But interestingly, you notice that the word my in the King James is in italics. Now, does anyone know when you're reading your King James and a word is in italics, what that means?
It means they inserted it.
It means they inserted it. Now, sometimes it is in the source language, sort of like, you know, one word translates to four words, and they'll have some of those words be italicized. Sometimes it's not. And this is one of those instances where the translators took a little bit of liberty with things because it was sort of a difficult passage to translate. One of the other possible meanings to that is that she stir not up nor awake love until it pleases. Which, as far as the Hebrew goes, seems to fit better, and as far as the context, the idea very well could be that she's speaking back to them and she says, don't rush in to love. Don't rush into an intimate relationship with other people, but wait for the right time. That's when you want to stir it up. When it pleases, when is it is an acceptable time. And that's one of the very real, very possible meanings of this verse, and it's going to be stated again in the next chapter. And that makes a lot of sense to me, given what God's trying to show here. One of the other thoughts, given how the King James translators translated it, that she's talking about him, don't stir him up, don't wake him up. Some have said that she's talking about when he's taking a nap after they've been intimate with one another, and she doesn't want these women to wake him up. That's another possibility. To me, the first one seems to fit better with kind of what's being said. But, you know, either way, they would both fit one way or another. So she longs for intimacy, and she calls out, do not stir up this love, or do not stir him up. And she says, the voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. So as he paralleled her previously to female horse, now, she parallels him to all these animals, leaping and bounding. And some have said that shows some strength. But I think what we see here is we see some excitement. Because she's about to quote him. So he comes looking for her. And sort of like the male, when you look at animals and how they function and stuff, the male will often try and show off in front of the females. That's kind of the parallel that's drawn here. Not to say that we necessarily function that way like animals do, but she's saying, he came before me. He wants to impress me. And we're especially going to see that when we see the language that he uses here. Because she says, "My beloved spake and said unto me." And now verse 10, down the rest of verse 10 down through 15, she's quoting him. She says, "He spoke to me and said, Rise up, my love, my fair one, come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle, or that is turtle dove, is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. Rise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, that art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs, let me see thy countenance," or the countenance there. "Let me see your form. Let me see your body. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely," or your form is lovely. So he comes along and he says, "Look, rise up, let's come away. The winter is over, the things are green, everything is growing up, let's go." But he's not talking about taking a vacation. Again, we have that idea of intimacy, because he starts talking about her form, and he wants to see her body. In verse 15, he says, "Take us the foxes," or the idea there is catch the foxes. "The little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." Now, I've kind of found in studying this that Song of Solomon is some of the most difficult poetry, for me at least, in the Old Testament sometimes, to figure out what's being said. But if we always remember that it's always going to come back to their desire for one another, and it's always somehow coming back to their desired intimacy for one another, then all of a sudden it begins to make sense, because essentially he's saying, "I desire intimacy with you, and don't let anything spoil it." He says, "Catch the foxes." So what are they going to do? They're going to go in. Some other translations, instead of grapes there, they render that vineyards. And there are other places in Song of Songs where the physical body is referred to as a vineyard. And so he says, essentially, the idea with this section is he comes along and he flatters her. He flirts with her. And that's allowed because he's her husband. Mm-hmm. Flirting is acceptable, but it needs to be in the right place. And he is very romantic. He doesn't just show up and say, "Hey, honey, I want to be intimate right now." That really doesn't work very well. But instead, he shows up and he says, "Come away with me. I desire to be with you." And he says very romantic things about her body. And then he even lets her know, "I desire this right now, and I don't want anything to spoil it. I very much want to be with you." So she tells the audience what he said. Now she's going to respond to this. She says, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved. Be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bether." Now, we're going to see a lot of allusions to places and locations that none of us are familiar with, but we can still get the idea. Essentially, what does she say there? Such a profound statement in chapter 2 and verse 16 that every person who desires to get married or who is married needs to understand this. She says, "My beloved is mine, and I am his." That's very much what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Yeah. Your bodies are one another's. Your bodies belong to one another. And so she returns in kind here, and she says in verse 17, essentially, "Stay with me all night long." She says, "Until the day breaks and the shadow goes away." So she also desires in this exactly what he came asking for. Stay the night with me, my husband. I desire this. Now, I think fellas can learn a lot from the way he approaches it. I think a lot of marriages would be a lot better off if the man understood that intimacy is about both people. And that can be hard sometimes based upon the way God has built certain urges into us, but we temper them, and that's why Song of Solomon is so important. Because we can look to his example and see that he truly meant the things he said. And she understood that, and she responded to that, and she desired to be with him, not just for the moments that they were physically intimate, but all night long she wanted to be with him. That's how much these words and these sentiments that he brought to her meant to her. So she says, "You're mine and I'm yours. Stay with me all night long." And although it's not mentioned in the text, what we're going to find out is between the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3, it seems that for a moment they've parted ways again. Not broken up, so to speak, but they're just not in one another's presence. And so now we see the attitude of how, what does she think about this? How does she respond to this? It says, she says, "By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not." Now she says, at night I'm laying in bed and I'm looking for him. She's probably dreaming about him, or she's just sitting there thinking about him. But very real possibility that she's having dreams about him, and she wants to be with him again. And she realizes just laying around isn't going to solve the issue. So she gets up to go to find him. She says, "I will rise now and go about the city in the streets and in the broad ways. I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw ye him whom my soul loveth? It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me." And then repeats again, "I charge you, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up nor awake my love till he please," or "stir not up or awake love until it pleases." So what we find, and this is something that, you know, it's so important to really think about it from their perspective. And this married couple has already been intimate with one another, but she says, "I want more of that. I desire to be with him again." And that's really important, because I know that I have known individuals, or of individuals, and I know plenty of people, apparently this is not uncommon, for a fella to go about and treat a lady really nice and really well, and not just for a couple weeks, but sometimes for a couple months or a couple years, and then without marriage, she gives in, and they're intimate with one another, and then he treats her like garbage and tosses her to the curb.
That's the truth.
There was just one thing he wanted, and once he got it, he was done. And to me, the parallel to some extent is, you know, we have to be careful that that's not, especially when we're teaching folks about marriage, younger folks, and what to look for and what to desire, to make sure they're really looking at the person and not just, hey, once we get married, then we're allowed to be intimate with one another. Because if that's the goal, that marriage is going to be really rough. But instead, seeing the attitude he had towards her and coming with that attitude and understanding that it's this constant desire that will keep us bound together in this kind of relationship. So she dreams of him and she goes looking for him and she finds him and she is thrilled with it. Now, in chapter 3 there, in verse 6 through 11, kind of, to me, so far the roughest spot in Song of Songs. And there's a couple possible thoughts here, but the most common thought is that she reflects upon the wedding procession. And she kind of, I don't want to say boasts about it, but she says, look at how great my husband is. Look at these things. She says, who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfume with myrrh, frankincense with all powders of the merchant? Behold his bed, which is Solomon's, 70 valiant men are about it, and of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man hath his sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom thereof of gold, the covering of it of purple, the midst thereof being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. Go forth, O ye daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him. Now that's not a kingly crown, but that's the type of wreath that they would wear in a wedding procession. In the day of his espousals and in the day of the gladness of his heart. The most likely thing here is that she is reflecting upon the wedding day. And she's just kind of bringing this back to mind and saying, look at how great this was. Look at all the trouble that they went through just for me, just for this relationship. And you see sort of the majesty, we don't get a full picture, but some of the splendor of this wedding procession. And think about it. I mean, this was a common girl that Solomon married, and yet he went through all that trouble just for her. Now, that's not to say we have to have extravagant weddings. But it does show from that perspective what he really thought about her. Mm-hmm. Because he wasn't saying, oh no, you're getting a lower wedding than I grant everyone else. Man, can you imagine Solomon going through that, you know, 1,000 times?
It'd been fun.
It'd be like if they had a 4th of July parade every day. Just like, oh yeah, there's the parade again. But even so, it shows these things. So now chapter 4, we skip over to him speaking again. And chapter 4, he says, behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. Within thy locks thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. And the historians have said the idea with the hair here is that it flows. So apparently her hair was rather curly. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which came up from the washing. Your teeth are white. That's what he means. Mm-hmm. He says, whereof everyone bear twins, and none is barren among them. Now, to us, it would kind of almost be an offense if I turned to my wife and I said, honey, boy, your teeth are white, and you sure do have all of them. But that's what he just said. They each one bear twins, and there's none missing among them. He says, your teeth are white, and you have all of your teeth. And apparently, this would have been a great compliment in the day. He says, thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, and thy speech is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the Tower of David. Boy, you want some fellas, you want to win over your wife. Just, you know, go home tonight and, honey, your neck is like the Tower of David. Do what now? My neck is what? It's like the Tower of David, builded for an armory, whereon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. This really helps us to recognize we are far removed from the culture that they were in.
Oh, yeah.
But this would have been some very intimate sweet talk, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the idea seems to be that you know, the Tower of David, whatever it was, would have drawn attention to itself. You're so very beautiful that your neck draws attention to what's on top of it, and you have a strong neck. The shields, the idea of the shields there. I think that's interesting because he still compliments her on things that she may have been insecure about. Being a worker from the field, I'm sure she's a very strong, robust woman. Mm-hmm. But he compliments her and he says, I find that strength to be something of beauty.
Oh, yeah.
He says, thy breasts are like the two young roes that are twins which feed among the lilies. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. He says, honey, I want to be with you all night long. He says, thou art all fair, my love. There's no spot in thee. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse. With me from Lebanon, look from the top of Amana, from the top of Shinar and Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. Thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes and with one chain of thy neck. How fair is thy love, my sister, my spouse? How much better is thy love than wine? Ah, you remember back very beginning, she said something very familiar. It's very similar to him. And the smell of thine ointments than all spices. Thy lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garment is like the smell of Lebanon. He keeps complimenting her. Just because they've been intimate a few times, he doesn't stop. You don't have to read marriage counseling books for very long before they say, hey, fellas, remember to keep complimenting your wife. Not in vain, but in honesty. And that's what he's doing. Continue to be ravished with one another, so to speak. Continue to have that same desire and just to be utterly sick with love or just to be completely smitten with each other. Keep those emotions going. And he says, verse 12, a garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse. A spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Now, this idea is going to be repeated a few times in the Song of Songs. He says, thy plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, camphor and spikenard. Spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices. A fountain of gardens, a well of living waters and streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come thou south, blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. I find verse 12 to be a rather weighty statement. She is a garden enclosed. And then he goes on and he talks about the things in this garden, and he desires, he says, the wind to blow that the spices may flow out. In other words, he wants the garden to open up to him. He says, her body is hers. It is beautiful. But it is private. And what an awesome lesson that we need to teach the unmarried.
Oh, yes.
Not just that the young women see their bodies in that way, that their body is a garden, is beautiful, but it is locked. And the men need to respect that.
That's true.
And understand that.
Amen.
And when do you get the key to the garden, so to speak? When you're married. That's when you're given the key. That's when you're allowed into the garden. And that's where it belongs. And she responds, this is one of those words difficult to see in the English, but chapter or verse 16 there, where it begins, "Let my beloved," that's her little pet name for him in the Hebrew, so we know she's speaking. So how does she respond here? "Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits." So we see the attitude that she has concerning this, which she said previously. It's, I am his and he is mine. And chapter 5, and the first part of verse 1, is the culmination of chapters 3 and 4. It's him speaking again, by the way. And he says, "I am come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spices. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk." So they're again intimate. And we see in Song of Songs this build up, and then they're with one another. And great lessons are to be seen in the conversation and what goes back and forth and their attitude concerning this. And this is what I find really fascinating, because I never would have caught this if I hadn't been looking to the Hebrew and stuff like that. Because where it says, "Eat, O friends," that's not him speaking anymore. That's the daughters of Jerusalem. And they say, "Eat, O friends, drink. Yea, drink abundantly, O beloved." Or some translations have rendered that, "Be drunk with love." So those daughters of Jerusalem are telling this married couple, enjoy your love with one another. And what a great attitude to have. It's not that they're getting involved in anything they don't need to be involved in. But they're celebrating the fact that, guess what? Solomon and his wife have this great relationship. And they know that they have a great relationship. And they celebrate that fact. And that's encouraging. I'm sure it would be encouraging to Solomon and his wife. Because you have others saying, "You keep it up. You two are on the right track. Don't lose what you have going because you have absolutely, you, it's a success. So don't lose sight on that." Now, next week, Lord willing, we will finish through the Song of Songs. And I hope that you can see how important this little, oft-ignored book is. Because if people got the principles shown in this, there'd be a lot less heartache in this world. Absolutely there would be. And remember I said Song of Solomon is not explicitly about Christ and the church, but anywhere in the Bible that it talks about a healthy marriage, we can learn about Christ and the church. Mm-hmm. And so to me, something we can learn from what we've seen in the lesson this afternoon is that I should always, once I've told Jesus, "Jesus, I serve you," from that point forward, I need to try and keep myself encouraged and keep myself inspired to constantly desire a good relationship with Jesus.
Amen.
To constantly have that desire to be with Him and to serve Him and to please Him.
Yes.
And in that we can learn great things. And while we are a creation that is lower than God, while we are the creation that once we have come to that age where we've committed our first sin, we are separated from God. Even Jesus himself came along and said some great things about us. The simple fact that God says there's something you must do in order to obey me means that he has faith in us that we can accomplish it. And so God has said some really good things about us. But the question is, are we living up to those great things that he's said about us? And do we desire that relationship with Jesus that Jesus says is always available? We just have to want it, and we have to keep on with it and keep our love of Jesus alive. Keep it kindled. Again, different type of love than the love that Solomon and his spouse had. Different form of love, I guess I could say. But love nonetheless. And so, at the close here, I ask a simple question. I ask you whether or not you've kept that flame going for your love and desire for Christ. Or have you even lit the flame? I sure hope you have. But if you haven't, guess what? Jesus is always calling, and we're always here to help you. And we want you to have the best relationship with Christ that you can. And if we can help you with that, we want to, but we can't help you unless you let us know about it. So if we can help you concerning your relationship with Jesus, please make it known to us while we stand and sing.